Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we visit with Mark Dwyer. His business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. He's a speaker, an educator, author. His degrees in landscape architecture and urban forestry. He's been with us many times on the show, and it's great to have him back. We're going to start by taking a look at adding fall mums and ornamental grasses to your garden. And, of course, we'll take your calls as well. What gardening questions or comments do you have? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Mark Dwyer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me.
So there are so many mums at this time of the year. Many gardeners buy them right now when they're in full color. What are the chances they're going to come back next year if you plant them in the garden?
Well, it's a great question, and it's the type of question I feel like I receive every year because, of course, our local garden centers and nurseries, which we should all patronize, of course, bring out the mums. Even a month or two ago, we started seeing them. And when the question comes up, are these perennials? Will they come back? The answer is kind of yes and no. The fact is they are typically hardy species. The challenge is with late planting, they're putting all their energy into flowering and very little energy into setting roots. They've been in that pot for many months. So it's a bit of a challenge, even if you're inserting them into the ground this time of year in the hopes of having them come back next year. Again, they may not settle in well enough. So a lot of people use them as seasonals for containers and decoration and compost them and realize they may not, you know, they may not take that extra step to try to overwinter them, so to speak. But I sure try it, and I do a little bit of leaf mulch over them when we get into November, and I've had, you know, mixed results. It's been worth it for me to try it.
Well, you know, you're a gardener. You want to experiment. When would it be too late?
Well, at this point in time, I don't feel it's too late because a great example in Janesville, when they're doing leaf collection along the curbside, my wife and I, when we're on a dog walk, we pick mums out of the leaf collection. And so we're planting them well into November, and we've had some of them come back. But the soil is still warm throughout the state. You know, we're starting to cool down. It's warm enough that some roots will set. But I think it's also important to mention there are true perennial mums that exist in your garden throughout the year. You know, we're always thinking of purchasing and inserting color now, which is understandable, but in my garden at home, I've had mums that emerged in spring, have been just pretty much green, of course, all year, and now are budding out and flowering, and I've had those for 10 to 15 years. So there are other options for more permanency with mums.
And you do need to mulch them if you're going to try it.
I feel like with the late planting, absolutely. And I let them turn totally brown, so they will have received a couple of frosts. They're done blooming. They're nothing but brown stubble. I keep them watered, and I trim them down to an inch or two, so it's just this stubble, and then I put some shredded leaves over the top, or evergreen boughs or straw, something that has some aeration to it. And then you hope for some snow cover, an additional blanket, and usually you'll see those come back if everything aligns perfectly.
And if they do come back, maybe talk a bit more about what do we do if they come up?
And that's another great question. You know, you can celebrate the emergence, you know, the resurrection in spring. But in essence, what the mums you're purchasing now have been pinched back many times in the greenhouse to keep them compact and very floriferous, lots of flowering. So what you want to do with those mums that reemerge in spring is, as you get into late May and into June, cut them in half, cut them way back. And what you're doing, and you can do this twice. You want to make sure you do it before the 4th of July is usually a good measurement. But by trimming them back once or twice, what you're doing is doubling your stem count and getting a lot more flowers on a compact plant. So you're trying to mimic that full look that you purchased the fall previously.
Marjorie emailed us, beginning gardeners. She says these questions might sound a bit simple. She wants to buy some mums and has heard it's best to repot them. How big of a pot should she buy, similar to the one you buy them in, and what kind of a potting soil works best?
Yeah, great questions. And as a beginning gardener, there's every question's a good question. We're all learning, of course. So the mums that you're buying that are in a standard, say, 8-inch pot or a 6-inch pot, when you pull them out, you'll see they're very root bound. They've been in those pots for many, many months. So they're very top heavy, very vegetative heavy. So ideally, you want to pick, inserting those into a larger pot allows for better watering, some more root growth. So I usually choose a pot that's slightly to marginally bigger, both around the sides and also in depth. So you have some additional soil, you're loosening the roots, you're packing that in there. Many people will use the mums as is. The real challenge, and I'll back up and say that's typically when they're used as a seasonal. The challenge, however, is they dry out so darn quickly. So just bump up a little bit larger container. You want stability. And if you're mixing it with other plants, just make sure you get some additional soil for additional rooting.
So what's wrong with, say, let's take a pot that's twice as big?
Yeah, so twice as big, the real challenge there is when you're putting a mum into that situation, you'll tend to have excessive moisture on the exterior. And, of course, your intent is that your mum will start setting roots into that container. But this holds true with many houseplants when you're repotting them. You don't want to shock them with too much additional soil that actually tends to have water linger. You want very sharp drainage through the majority of your containers. So there are some exceptions, but absolutely for mums. So the danger in having too big of a container, you think you're doing that mums a favor. In essence, you're creating a kind of a wet collar around those roots. So bump it up slightly is my recommendation.
Mark Dwyer, our guest today on this edition of Garden Talk. We're starting by talking about fall mums and ornamental grasses. We haven't gotten to grasses yet, but questions for him. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Linda from Appleton sent us an email. She just received her sedge plugs. She's not planting today. Will it be okay for a couple of days? You know, it's kind of wet out there and windy. Can she plant them directly in the pile of composted wood chips?
Well, the short answer is this time of year, you absolutely can plant sedges. When we talk a little bit more about some of the ornamental grasses, spring is a little more ideal because you have more time to have them settle in. But again, with those warm soil temperatures, it's a good time. I guess I'm a little confused by the composted wood chips. So you want to make sure those sedges are getting into, of course, the soil that you have, whether that's mulched or not. But the short answer is wait a couple days. It's a great time to plant in general. So I feel like she'll be just fine waiting.
And across a good bit of Wisconsin, we're going to have a lot of rain, so we're going to have soil that's you're not going to have to water. That's for maybe too wet.
Right. Well, and I lived in Appleton for a while, and I know there's a lot of red clay up that way. So it's, we're loving the precipitation further south, but and we're still deficient on the year. That watering until the ground freezes for new plantings is vital. So make sure you have a nice, moist situation for your new installations.
You know, I was, I played golf this past week, and I was I was at a golf course in southwest Wisconsin, and at one of the couple of areas around the tees, there was pampas grass,
mm-hmm.
and it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and you know, I think it kind of fit the area because it's, you know, you're in a large area and you got this big pampas grass. Growing. It was absolutely gorgeous. And it can fit into a smaller area than a golf course.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important to mention when we talk about our climate, what we would observe or identify as pampas grass is actually likely a type of miscanthus or a Japanese silver grass. So with common names, there's a lot of confusion with pampas grass, which is not hardy for us in the state. So what you saw, Larry, is likely one of the really nice miscanthus that are getting their inflorescences. Right now, they're just gorgeous with feathery plumes. And
yes.
Every year I ask people, say, I want that pampas grass. And but to your point about scale, there's a lot of diminutive or shorter versions of just about any type of ornamental grass for any setting. So it's a great palette of plants to explore.
Yeah, it sure is. And we can talk some more about that. Jim in River Falls has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Yeah, I'm just wondering, I just did some excavating, and I would need to replant an area. And I put down winter rye just as a cover crop, but I'm wondering if I can throw in, you know, just like a lawn mix, you know, with perennial rye and, you know, sort of shady lawn mix, if that would still be all right to plant this fall, or if it's too late for that at this point.
You're in River Falls, so you're up there a little bit. But what about it, Mark?
Yeah, that's. I'm not sure. I'm not confident giving advice on whether it's too late or not. And in fact, I think with the through UW, their Turfgrass Institute, there's some great professors. I would encourage you to reach out, perhaps through your extension agent, and get some advice on that, because yeah, timing's of the essence. But you want to make sure you're getting the right mix and the right time of year. So. I would defer to the experts on that one.
Yeah, it's could be a little dicey in River Falls. They can always be planted in spring, but yeah, it might be worth checking with UW horticulturists on that one just to see, Jim. Thanks for calling. Barbara in Cross Plains, will you go to you? Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Every winter, especially around Christmas, I see these beautiful amaryllis bulbs in bloom, and I'm wondering if this is the year when I could try to do whatever I have to do now so that I could have some of those. Is this the right time to do something with one of those bulbs?
Well, the amaryllis are a blast, and of course we see them throughout our garden centers, and many stores carry the bulb in a bulb kit. They'll sell you the soil, the pot, and everything's ready to go. So you'll start seeing those, if not already, in the store. So the answer is, what you're purchasing is a dormant bulb is ready to go. You don't have to, there's no waiting. And they'll be sold for months and then go on discount. And incidentally, there are ways to overwinter those to save them once they bloom and go dormant. And some folks start bringing them outside in the summer and rotate them in. It's a little more involved. But the short answer to your question is, if you see them for sale, and you can find them online as well, you absolutely can start that process anytime from now through the winter season, because that's, of course, the timing for retail of selling that bulb to Midwesterners. So give it a whirl. They're very rewarding and very easy to grow.
Yeah. And Barbara, though, do you have your own amaryllis bulbs that you want to do this with, or were you thinking of, as Mark was describing, just purchase some?
I have one our family presented to me on Christmas in a little decorative sock or something like that, and I peeled back the sock, and there's a bulb in there, and everything that was coming out of the top has dried off, but there's something green coming out. I don't know if I can reuse that one or if I have to go out and purchase from the new ones and start from the beginning, as you just described.
Yeah, so you received it last Christmas, is that correct?
And bloom, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I think I'd give it a whirl. I mean, if it's still firm, if there's no rot to it, you would have to plant it to get some sort of growth, of course. So I would give that a whirl, but it might be out of cycle if it didn't have some summer foliation, which is the challenge I was referring to, the folks that rotate them in and then bring them, rotate them out and bring them back in. And there's lots of online references on how to do this. But I personally, if I had that, I'd plant it now and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I would as well. Barbara, good luck with it. Let us know how it turns out. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Talking fall in the garden today with our guest Mark Dwyer, and Jill Nadeau is our producer, by the way, and Clara Neipert's our on-air producer, and Tyler Ditter's our engineer, and I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you along today for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with our guest Mark Dwyer. His business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD, and we're talking about kind of fall in the garden, but taking your questions, whatever they might be. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Mary in Neillsville. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have a question. I have two calla lilies that I've actually planted in the ground in a flower bed. Now, what should I do with them so that I have them, keep them over winter in the house?
Right. Well, I'm happy to hear you want to save them, because a lot of people will just, in our climate, will just, of course, pitch them and use them as seasonals, and they're absolutely gorgeous. So you can do one of two things, and that's digging them up quite soon, because, of course, the weather is going to turn for the worst and soil temperatures will dip, and maintain them as a house plant. And, of course, adequate light becomes important, air circulation, all the things you would provide for your full-sun house plants over the winter months. Frequent inspection for insects and such. The other thing is the calla bulb, the calla lily bulb, you can actually rinse that off and store it as you would many of your other tubers, your cannas, your dahlias. It's one of those that's, you have to provide a certain temperature, 55 to 60 degrees for dormancy, and then you could replant it in March or April inside and get some regrowth. So I guess if you have some space inside, nestle it between your house plants. Otherwise, try this dormant storage, and you'll be rewarded and can repot it again next year.
There you go, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Rich in Middleton, on to you now. Hi, Rich.
Yes. Follow up on that amaryllis. I've done this for many years. I had discontinued when I was doing COVID, but I got a bulb. My sister-in-law sent us a bulb, you know, one of those packages where you put it and you have to pot it up and all that. And it grew that year, but that wasn't very good. But what I do is in the spring of the year when the soil gets warm, I just go and stick it in my garden, raised bed garden, and I stake up the leaves that are there, and it generally will put out more leaves. And then 2 weeks ago, I just pulled them out, and I got them in the basement just drying out now, and then I'll store them. And next early spring, I'll bring them out again, and they produce more and more bulbs, is what they do. So,
Rich, thank you for calling. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, that's awesome, to be honest. I have a friend who rotates about 200 amaryllis very similarly. And so you're taking it out of, you know, what we're purchasing as a dormant bulb over the holiday season. The timing for its growth and bloom is suited to our warm summers in the state. So but this gentleman, what he's doing is incorporated a tropical into his landscape, and then is doing the winter storage. So to the earlier caller about that bulb, I would still grow it on, because it's been about a year since it's, you know, actually did anything. But with a little bit of elbow grease, you can perpetuate so many of these wonderful plants. So an amaryllis is just one of many.
Let's go to Greg in Sheboygan next. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I have a problem with horseradish. I used to grow horseradish years and years back. I'm 70. And it was super hot, the root, when you ground it. But now I'm growing horseradish, and it's so mild. It doesn't have any heat at all to it. And I don't know if it's a different variety or something. I don't know what the heck. I wasted 4 years of growing this stuff.
Yeah. So is it the same patch of horseradish that has become milder in flavor?
No. It's totally different. I was living in a different area of Wisconsin, and now I'm growing it in Sheboygan, and I was growing it south of Milwaukee in Franklin, and it was really hot when I grew it down there. But now I don't know if it's just a different species or something or what.
Yeah, well, I know soil type and soil pH can affect the pungency. And to your comment about the hot stuff, I mean, if you process the hot stuff, that brings tears to your eyes. So the fact that it's become milder, it's likely the standard species of horseradish. There are some different varieties, but the majority are very spicy. So my guess is it's a soil condition of some sort. So it's tough to say exactly what's going on, So maybe an extension agent could give you some advice. But it's frustrating. Who wants mild horseradish, right? So yeah. I'm not sure what to tell you.
Well, if it's the soil, I think that's a good point that you made, Mark. I think the soil conditions, they vary. That's going to affect the plant for sure.
Right. Absolutely.
Greg, thank you for calling. Pat in Watertown. On to you now. Hi, Pat.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I want to disagree with Mark. I'm going to say a number of years ago, and I can't really say how many. All I know is that my older children were all off in school and the Marines. And their bedrooms were on the second floor of the house. So I knew I didn't have to be up there until Thanksgiving time or before to clean things up again. I had to get up there and dust because I hadn't been up there. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, oh, that amaryllis. I took it out of the pot last year after the leaves had died, and I had removed it out of the pot and I had left it on the counter. Oh, I better go get that and so I can get it started. And I got up there to discover, here is my bulb with the roots of the bulb hanging out and a flower blooming on the counter. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, I apologize to you. I'll get you in some dirt now. And then I put it in dirt then, but it was blooming without any dirt, not even any water, just sitting on the counter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. In fact, well, you'll find amaryllis that are wax, dipped in wax, and are grown in essentially a vase with water. So the roots will extend into the water vase. So the bulb has everything it needs to bloom. So I'm not sure I said that soil is essential, but most of the kits that you pick up do include some soil in the pot. But no, you're absolutely right. They want to live, and that's a remarkable story. They're very tough plants.
I love that story. Pat, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. That's a good one. Oh, man. Gene in Madison. On to you now. Hi, Gene.
Hi there, Larry. I'm thrilled to be on the phone with you again. I have a question for Mark. There is a grapevine that grows on a fence near my house that produces some beautiful, sweet grapes. I presume they're a fox variety. And in my research, it seems to me that I have learned that grapes behave much like apples, in that you can plant the seeds from those grapefruits, and you don't know what you're going to get. And I guess that's why you typically are buying cuttings and slicing when it comes to grapes and apples, if you want to have some control over what species you're going to end up with. I'm wondering if you have any advice for me on these 20 grape seeds that I salvaged out of these beautiful grapes, and if it's not a smart idea to try to get these in the ground and plant them, for I might end up with something that's not what I'm looking for, at least not the grapes, like the grapes they came from. Any advice on that front?
Right. Boy, that's you're right about the fact that for consistency of the variety or the species perpetuating vegetatively, of course, is a slam dunk, whether it's cuttings on an apple or rooting sections of that same grape. So the question, I'm not a grape expert, but I would speculate that with pollination, the only concern, I'm trying to remember if grapes are self-pollinated, but ultimately the concern about seed grown is if cross-pollination is from another species or variety, the seed may not come true to what you desire. So I do know, I keep referring folks to UW Extension, but they've done a whole bunch of grape research out at West Madison Agricultural Research Center, west of Madison. And I would encourage you to direct that question to Extension, because I'd hate to tell you, go for it, that you would have the consistency you're looking for from those seeds.
Yeah, UW Extension, they have a publication entitled Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And it may, and you could just go UW Extension Publications, type that in. And I think the title is Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. It might have some information for you right there, Gene. Give it a shot. Thank you so much for calling. Lynn in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, I'm calling from Milwaukee. I propagates calla lilies. And I just wanted to suggest that a much easier way to grow calla lilies would be to leave them in the pot. I've been doing this for over 10 years, and you leave the bulb in a 2-gallon nursery pot with some potting soil. And of course you leave it out in the summertime and you have beautiful foliage and beautiful flowers. And then like just a week ago, I took them into the house, and you want to make sure that the soil is very, very dry. So you might have to dry out the pot on your front porch before you put it in the basement. And then you just leave the pot in the basement all winter, and you don't have to take the bulbs out as long as the soil is very dry when you bring the pot into the basement. And then in the spring, after the frost is over, you just put your pot outside, and it's the easiest way. You don't have to mess around with digging a bulb out of the ground and replanting it and then forgetting where you planted it. So I just wanted to suggest that calla lilies are very beautiful. They're very hardy. They're very long flowering, and they're a beautiful cut flower. And more people should grow them in 2-gallon nursery pots that you can recycle from your garden center, and then just put them in your basement and bring them back out. And year after year, they're just
there. You go.
Beautiful.
Yeah, Lynn, thanks for calling. Comment, Mark.
Oh, I think that's some great advice, and it's nice to hear from someone with lengthy experience with calla lilies, because I totally agree. They're absolutely gorgeous, and I think people shy away from them because they're not sure what to do with them. And to your caller's point, that storing them dry is vital. You want to avoid that rot. But what a great comment and idea for easy storage and perpetuation of the calla lily.
Yeah. Lynn, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way. Open lines get you on fairly quickly here at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Chris in Black Creek, we'll go to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. I've always noticed through the years that people will they'll let all the green tomatoes go in the fall on their tomato plants. You know how tomato plants are. They just keep producing. So I take my green tomatoes, and you make fried green tomatoes. I'm sure you've heard of that. Or I'll freeze them and throw them into a stew later. But my question is, I've never tried this, but can you take a tomato plant, if it's not minor in raised beds, but if it's in a pot or something, can you take them indoors and give them proper lighting and have them last all winter until spring? Thanks, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, first of all, that's great comments about green tomatoes. And both at home and at work, we do the same thing. We don't let any tomatoes go to waste. And there are some ways to try to ripen them along, but you absolutely can use them as your caller mentioned. In terms of keeping a tomato inside, I've never done that, but my gut feeling is, you know, as a tropical plant, ultimately they likely could do that. The challenge, of course, is adequate lighting, heat. You know, there's a lot of challenges to not only keeping it live, but perhaps if the expectation is fruit production over the winter, I think that would be challenging. But I don't know that its life cycle is as an annual. We all dig them up and compost them at the end of the season, but maybe it's worth a try to see if that would work. But I think it has many inherent challenges in doing that.
Yeah, I probably want to cut them. It'd have to be cut back.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have to be cut way back, for sure, if you had to have any chance at all.
Right.
Oh, boy. Deborah in Verona. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, yeah. It's Verona, by the way. I don't know that really matters. I have a question concerning dahlias again. So I do the dahlia thing like the gal does with the calla lily, where I just dry out the pot and put the plant, pot and all, in the basin.
Yeah.
And what's happened, like, I've had this dahlia for maybe 5 years now, and the first year I got it, the blooms were huge. They were massive blooms. And over time, each year, the blooms get smaller and smaller and smaller. And I even, like, replaced the soil in the pot a couple years ago, thinking, well, there's no more nutrients in there. And I do try and water every so often with maybe a few drops of Miracle-Gro in the water. But my concern is that someday it's just not going to bloom anymore, and I don't know what to do about it.
Well, that, to be honest, that's the first I've heard of a dahlia having a reduced-size flower year after year, which does happen with some plants. And I'd be curious if other listeners have had that issue. You know, addressing the storage, if that works for you, of course, that in you, the plant comes back, that's great. I tend to dig my dahlias this time of year, cut the flower stalks off, really rinse them off, get every speck of soil off, and then I, what's called, dry store them. I do the same thing with cannas, incidentally. I dry store them in aerated racks at this magical temperature of about 55 degrees in a cool basement, where that temperature doesn't activate growth and it doesn't encourage rot. So the challenge with storage is some people might do it in too hot of a location or too cool, or it might be too moist, to the earlier caller about calla lilies and now our discussion about dahlias. But circling back to the smaller flower, I'm not sure about that, why that would be, to be honest. My only theory is if the plant's too happy, it's maybe putting a lot of growth into vegetative, you know, leaves and stems, and not as interested in having full-size blooms. But my dahlias have perpetuated identical flowers for many, many years. So maybe others have thoughts.
Yeah, maybe it. I think you might be onto something, though, with the plant being too happy and not needing to put up a bigger flower.
Right.
Yeah.
Tough to say.
Yeah, it's tough to say. But I think that's a clue, Deborah. Thank you for calling. Phil in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Two quick questions. Do I need to freeze the wildflower seeds that I've collected in order for them to germinate next spring? And secondly, reference this conversation on amaryllis. I got as a gift a beautiful amaryllis bulb that I grew this past growing season this year. And it's quite large. Do I need to repot it? And I haven't cut it back yet. Is it too late to cut it back to get it to grow starting in the early early new year?
Yeah, that's a tough call. I think, to the gentleman that called earlier about him having him out in the yard and then bringing him in and cutting him back and storing him for next year for insertion in his garden, it sounds like you want to try to time it where you get bloom over the winter time. So it's tough to say that would happen. Cutting back amaryllis, they'll respond fairly quickly, but I'm not sure of the status with the repotting. That becomes a tough question. I know there's lots of literature on theories on how to properly do it, so you may get some other guidance elsewhere. But in terms of your wildflower seed, the majority does need that stratification, the idea that in nature it's going through a winter. You know, it's going through that cold period. So whether it's the freezer or refrigerator, that cool period becomes important for a vast majority for proper germination. So I would encourage you to do that. But I'm sorry, I don't have a great answer for your amaryllis. I don't want to give you a bum steer on what to do this time of year.
Yeah. Phil, thank you for calling. Randall in Sturgeon Bay, on to you. Hi, Randall.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a comment about the horseradish as well as a question about begonias.
Okay.
So the comment is, you can control the pungency of your horseradish by how you prepare it. Traditionally, we've always added vinegar and salt to taste to ground horseradish to keep it preserved. If you grind the horseradish dry and wait a quarter of an hour. Let it expose to the air. Then add your salt and vinegar. It will be more pungent. If you grind it with this vinegar and salt simultaneously, then it'll be milder.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Randall. And you had a question about begonias.
Yes, please. I've got some beautiful begonias in the garden, and I'd like to preserve them over the winter. And I just wonder what's the best way to do that.
Well, first of all, thank you for your comment on horseradish. I'm actually personally not a fan, so I don't consume it, and I've not personally processed it. But that's some great advice for the listeners, because it's an endeavor. I know people that do this. They don't do it in an enclosed space for obvious reasons. But the begonia, I bring a lot of my begonias in simply as houseplants, to be honest. And they look a little bedraggled, and we know they can take partial sun. So our winter homes with variable lighting are just fine. But to my earlier comment about bringing plants from out in the garden inside, you want to make sure you inspect for insects and diseases. And I've perpetuated some beautiful begonias for almost a decade now. And you should have no trouble. And don't worry about, they do like moisture, but as with many of our winter house plants, just don't overdo it. That's the kiss of death is too much moisture for begonia.
So damp but not wet?
Yeah, damp and well-drained pot and just water when you see it, when you see the soil really drying. Do that finger test, really poke in there. Because they'll be fine with winter lighting in our 70-degree homes. So it's a little different scenario in our summers. So they'll let you know when they're having trouble. So a little benign neglect is okay for begonias in our winter homes.
Randall, good luck. Thank you. Judy in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. And I'm so excited about all the amaryllis talk. I have a historic amaryllis. My husband's great-grandparents, the story is, brought the original bulbs that I have, of course, have, you know, multiplied, but those original bulbs came from Germany. They were passed on through, my mother-in-law loved her amaryllis, told the story all the time about grandma bringing the bulbs from Germany. Every year, I put it outside for the summer. It's blooming right now. It's full of leaves. I have one blossom. The end of October, I will take it down to the basement, let it all die back. Maybe not let it dry out too much, but I'll just add a little water. Once it's all died back and I start seeing new shoots come up, usually about the 1st of December, I'll bring it back up and gradually take off all those dead leaves, and it will bloom profusely. I have had 30 blossoms at a time. It likes to be root-bound. I finally repotted it and split it up with my son. It came. The bulbs were coming out of the pot 10 inches, a pile of bulbs.
Wow.
Wow. And so that, doing the math on that, that's like three generations at least. And who knows what grandma who brought it over from Germany, was it her mother?
Yeah, what a great story. And I think that helps answer the question from the earlier caller with the amaryllis and what to do with it. It sounds like the timing is okay to cut it back, bring it in, let it dry. And then when you see those new shoots, you know, give it another whirl for holiday bloom. And I should mention, it's both my adult daughters, over the years when they were smaller, we would give them amaryllis bulbs for Christmas for, you know, kind of a slam dunk gift. And they both have green thumbs, and they've kept their amaryllis for years, and they haven't necessarily followed a storage pattern or rebloom or anything, but the same amaryllis continue to keep growing, and they have that tie to their youth. So I love that heirloom story, that historic, you know, you're tied to a plant, and what a great way to do that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Judy, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it. Well, what about you? Questions or comments? Experience to share? Give us a call. The number is 800 642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org. Mark Dwyer, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Mark Dwyer. Great to have Mark with us. He's been with us a number of times, and always fun to have him back. He's an educator, author. His business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. Ralph emailed us and wondered, Mark, if he can do to his mums what he does with his geraniums. And here's what he does. He lives in Vilas County. Each winter keeps his 12-inch potted geraniums in a second-story heated garage facing southwest at 45 degrees. He cuts the geraniums down to 2 inches and only waters once a month. Geraniums look great right now outside. He wheels them into the garage at night, and when it freezes at night. Can he do this with a mum?
My gut feeling, it's a great question and admirable to give that a try, but my gut feeling is no. I feel, you know, when our conversation about the mums being perennial, they do need a certain amount of the winter dormancy. So with geraniums, it's a different beast. I think about the old-fashioned geraniums my grandma would bring inside and shake off the soil and hang them upside down in the basement for the entire winter, and they'd shrivel up and they were still alive, and she'd bring them back out. So if his proposal doesn't allow the mum to experience a winter dormancy, I wouldn't try it.
Let's take a call from Kara in Oconomowoc. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Great. So I have a question about any tips that you might have for overwintering to Boston fern.
Yep. Well, Boston fern, what a great plant. My daughter does the classic huge Boston fern containers on her front porch in Milton, Wisconsin, and where they look great throughout the growing season. Of course, we're getting to a cooler portion of the year. So they can be brought in as house plants. To some of the earlier comments, that the challenges become adequate watering. The lighting is not so much of an issue, although you want to rotate your plant and have it near a window where it gets indirect sunlight. Inevitably, you'll see some browning with a Boston fern inside, so you need to be wary of that. But she's had the same Boston ferns for 3 winters now. She's brought them in the house. And I tell you, they look horrible by April. And she revives them, gets them out, and they're good to go. So, again, it's a little TLC as a house plant, and they'll be okay. But measured water, don't overdo it, and rotate the plant. You'll be okay. A little misting probably wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah, there you go, Kara. Thank you. Sandy in West Allis, on to you. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Yeah, you had a question about can you bring in your tomato plants. I do all the time, you know, living in West Allis or Milwaukee. And you can bring in the green, just the green tomatoes, and put them out, and they will turn red. You know, pick them and bring them in. Or I also bring in the whole plant, whether it's in a pot or it's been in the ground. I bring it in, I put it on my kitchen table, and it gets a little bit, not great sun, but it gets a little sun, but I leave a light on at night. I water it like a regular house plant, and I still get my tomatoes as long as they've been pollinated.
That's amazing. That's great to hear. And you know, I know with some of these indoor light setups where you can grow herbs and compact smaller vegetables during the winter months, they include the really compact tomatoes in there. So the idea that they could take the interior of a home, I think, is amazing too. But the fact that you're doing this, that's a great answer to the earlier gentleman about, you know, can I? And it sounds like you sure can.
Sandy, thank you. Good for you. And you know, I like the smell of tomato plants.
Yeah, me too.
It's, you know, it's not a flower smell. It's a tomato plant smell, and it's I like it. Yep. Denise in Winona, Minnesota, what's on your mind?
Well, in my little tiny garden, I planted a poinsettia plant from last winter or during the holidays, and it has just been doing marvelously. And, of course, it's in the dirt, and it's this nice green bubble of leaves and looking very nice. And I wonder if I can bring it in and make it do all the wonderful things that poinsettias do. And how would I do it?
Oh, that's a long, arduous journey you got there, Denise.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to discourage you. The short answer is you absolutely can dig it up and bring it in the house, and it will grow. And I use family stories here, but my mom's had a poinsettia for 20 years. The challenge in recovering the color, which isn't really the flowers, it's the bracts, it involves excluding light for a certain amount of time. So when you're purchasing them from garden centers, they've gone through a whole series of 15 hours of dark, and this, and I'm minimizing what's a more complicated process. But the short answer of yes, you can bring it in. The tougher challenge is resuming that color. It can be done. There's lots of references on how to do it. Some people will put a box over it and a timer and keep track of. It can be done, but you'll have to do a little research.
Yeah, and if during a dark period somebody accidentally opens the closet door or the box,
right,
you got to start all over again.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
So, yeah, there is some pretty good advice online, Denise. So you can, you know, if you got a place where you can keep it and you are interested in really doing the work, you can do it. And it would make for a great story, I can tell you that, if it works.
Yep.
Thanks, Denise. Oh, man. Dan in Poplar emailed us. He had a new mound septic system installed. It's probably too late to seed. His question is this: should he be putting some kind of ground cover such as straw or fallen leaves on the bare soil before winter?
I don't think it would hurt. I mean, you know, there's the logical considerations of will that stuff blow off or how will you get it to kind of stick? But you don't want a lot of erosion, or if we get a lot of wind through November, you don't want to lose your existing soil over the new mound. So it wouldn't hurt to put something over there. I am concerned about straw blowing away, but you could get some netting and do that. It is getting late to do any sort of seeding of anything that would establish. So if there is a way to establish some sort of ground cover to minimize erosion until you make a decision on what you're doing next year, I would go forward with it. Yes.
Anna emailed us to say to please note that the bulbs are toxic to dogs. Some bulbs are. And if your dog likes to dig in a garden or a house potted plant, be aware.
Great comment. And there's many, many references on toxic house plants, and we should all be aware of that. And I've got a 2-year-old grandson, and we're worried about, you know, what he may try to grab and nibble. And we've got plenty of cats at home, too, that we're concerned about. So absolutely be safe both inside and outside, and know your toxic plants.
Let's go to Phyllis in the town of Dunn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. So I have poinsettia plants, trees, that are 22 years old. We had to sell poinsettias because our son was in the boy choir, and then I just couldn't bear to let him die. So they go out every summer for, you know, a vacation in the outside, and then I bring them in when it's going to frost. And they look, they're so lovely. They're, I don't know, 3.5 feet tall probably, and they look like little trees, very woody stems. And once in a while, they will give some color. I don't do what you were talking about. I don't know anything about that process, but somehow I must have just kind of lucked into it. So I would encourage people to do that. They're lovely. And I even have one little one also that was a branch that broke off, and it's usually almost impossible for them to root in water, but this one did.
Oh, what a great story. You know, the first time I think I traveled to Trinidad, which is a long time ago, I was so amazed to see the poinsettias that were, you know, of course, it can just keep growing throughout the season or the year in a climate like we have in South America and in the Caribbean.
Yeah, no, I would agree. That was a great story, and they can get large. And my mom's story was the same. She couldn't part with the poinsettia. It had some sentimental value, and hers has never been red again. But hers is also 3 feet tall, and it's become a great houseplant with a story, and that's always a consideration.
Mark Dwyer is our guest today. Mark, a speaker, educator, and author. And his business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. Always a pleasure to have Mark with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mark Dwyer, speaker, educator, and author, degrees in landscape architecture and urban forestry, and his business is Landscape Prescriptions by MD. So, what gardening questions do you have? Join the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Joy in Madison has a question for you, Mark. Let's go there. Hi, Joy.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question about gloxinias. They have not seemed to be particularly popular for decades now. When I was a little girl, all the grandmas had gloxinias, and they were gorgeous. I just bought some bulbs last spring, and I neglected to plant them, but they were implying it's an outdoor plant, and I was used to seeing it as a very cherished, big, flashy, bigger than African violet indoor houseplant. So what can you tell me about gloxinias?
Well, I would agree with you that they're underrepresented and maybe more underappreciated than they ever have been, which is a bummer. But, you know, with gloxinias, I've seen them used both outside as a, you know, as a summer tropical and also as a container plant that's later brought inside. So I don't have a lot of personal experience with growing them, but I would agree that it's a shame that it's not grown more often. And I would encourage people to do a Google search of gloxinia and check out the unbelievable flowering of these plants. And hopefully they'll get a resurgence because they're not difficult to grow, but they do have both inside and outside applications.
Yeah. Joy, thank you so much. John in New Berlin. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Just wanted to get the advice from your expert or perhaps from you. I, too, have a limey here.
Hmm.
And limey has not bore fruit or blossomed in the past 2 years. And I'm getting discouraged. I'm planning on repotting him when I bring it in. Any advice on what might be the problem?
Is it flower at all?
It has flowered a little bit, but the flowers have been decreasing. I also have had two rip-roaring episodes of scale.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I am sad to report that my limey, lime tree, passed away from scale. That was a sad day for me. I just couldn't get rid of it, and I had limey for so many years. I think maybe it was a combination of things, but I couldn't bring limey back this time. But when I would bring limey in, the first thing limey would do would be to flower like crazy. And then I would sit there and kind of fan limey with a fan and try and blow the you know, disturb it a little bit. And I would have sometimes 25, 30 lime trees, limes on her. So sad story for me, but what do you know, if it's not blooming, what might be the problem there, Mark?
Well, I feel out of the loop because you guys both have had limeys. I've not done it myself, so I don't have a lot to offer. I know it can be challenging, but the idea of doing a little repotting and maybe rejuvenating it in that regard might be the way to go. But, yeah, the scale could certainly affect the vigor and flowering and then fruiting. So keeping a nice, clean plant and the repotting might be, the way to go, because it sounds like it has thrived in the past. But you guys have more collective experience than I do.
On fertilizing, the one thing that I did that was, I think, worked really well was I just used a fish emulsion fertilizer, and I fertilized every time I watered. And I gave that advice to another horticulturist, and she, because she had the same problem that you're having, John, and she got limes. It's a mild fertilizer, and if you do it when each time you water. At least my experience was that I was able to get limes all the time. So I give that a shot, fish emulsion fertilizer, and see if you can bring your limey along better than mine, unfortunately, who has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a shot, John. See what happens. Becky and Ryo, your turn. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Mark and Larry. Thanks for taking my call. So my back is shot, and I would like to start doing some container gardening instead of in-ground gardening next summer. I live on a farm, and so I have old box tanks available to me for containers, and they've already got holes in the bottom because they rusted through. Do I have to put anything in the bottom, or can I just fill up the whole thing with soil? That's one question. And I know that my soil has some weed seeds in it. I've got a pile of black dirt out in back that I plan to use. Can I just put a couple inches of new soil on top to cover up those weed seeds? And then do I have to put anything in the bottom, or can I just fill it with soil?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear. What sort of receptacle? What sort of container?
A stock tank.
Oh, so, stock tanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my day gig is at the Edgerton Hospital Healing Garden, and we just planted 2 years ago. We did stock tank planters, five of them, 300-gallon, you know, drilled holes. So you alluded to the drainage being important. What we did was we did line the bottom with a landscape fabric just to still allow drainage but not have any soil erode out through the holes. But we created a custom soil mix that included some topsoil, but we added some lightweight potting soil that had some peat moss and perlite, vermiculite. We were doing vegetables specifically in these. So what we wanted to do was create kind of a lightweight mixture. And we didn't fill the stock tanks all the way up. I went to about, they're 2 feet tall. So I went to about 15 inches and everything grew amazingly. And to your question about weed seeds, even covering those up, you're going to get some that are going to poke through. Some require light to germinate, some don't. So you'll just have to be vigilant with what's poking up back through there. But we've added compost, an inch of compost the last 2 years, and kind of churned it in. So in lieu of, we're not swapping out the soil every year in these five stock tanks, we're just kind of enriching it. We've had bumper crops of tomatoes, cucumbers, squash, peppers. It's been amazing. In fact, today we picked our last peppers. So stock tanks are excellent for reuse. I will say there's some research with, as they degrade, there's some sort of oxidation they're concerned about. I don't know if it's zinc or something. I'm rambling here, and I'm not going to speak well on it, but they are doing some research on the long-term effect of growing vegetables in really old stock tanks that are starting to degrade a little bit. But newer ones shouldn't have any of those issues. And I've rambled on, but I think they're a great scenario for growing things.
Becky, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Jerry in Kakana, on to you. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, I was hoping your guest might be able to tell me what kind of tree is growing in my driveway. It's like a bush tree almost, but it's very tall. Has branches that come up from the base all the way up. It's probably right now 20 feet tall, and the leaves look like almost like mint leaves, like Wrigley Spearmint Mint, and they're opposed. So one right across from the other on the branches.
You know,
yeah, tough to say. Yeah. We'd have to see a photo, I think, of the leaves.
I think we'd have to see a photo of the leaves, maybe one of the tree and one of the leaves, Jerry, in order to do that. So get a photo. You're probably not going to have time to do it today, but for another edition of Garden Talk, there'll probably be somebody, if we can see the photo of the leaves and one of the tree, we might be able to, I'm pretty sure we'd be able to help out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nancy in Mequon, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. It's so nice to meet both of you, especially you, Larry. And I want to say that I'm wondering, I'm not the expert, but I did give my husband a limey for his office. for his birthday, I'm wondering if you stress the limey. So, in other words, cut back for a little bit on the amount that you, maybe the amount you water, but definitely the amount you fertilize. And one of the things that I, and see if that might, you know, ooch limey into producing flowers in order to perpetuate its life. And the other thing is I do that with my little orchids that I get from Sendix and so forth. And they do very well with this technique.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. That's good advice, Nancy. They, you're not watering a ton. You don't want a damp, you don't want a wet soil. And so you don't water that often. And then if you use a fish emulsion fertilizer, that's a very weak fertilizer. And so there's a little bit of stress, I think, associated with that. And maybe that's why Limey always did such a good job. Thank you very much for that comment. Appreciate it. Nancy and Hurley, Jan and Hurley, your turn. Hi, Jan.
I have a comment on the amaryllis. My friend planted hers in the garden, which was a drain line for the next door garage. She planted them all the way to the stem. They all rotted. Fair warning, you don't plant them that deep and don't plant them under drain lines.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, great advice. Yeah, sure.
You know, speaking of planting bulbs, Sue in Downing emailed us. She's interested in forcing some spring bulbs. Wants to know how to do it. She always needs color in February and March and thinks it would be great to have a dish of bulbs blooming in her house.
Yeah, the bulb forcing, there's lots of references on it, but in essence, what you need to do with, in some bulbs, you can't force well. Many you can, like garden hyacinths, tulips. There's a wide range of bulbs that are easy to force, but what you have to do is replicate their dormancy. So you have to have 8 to 10 weeks of cold temperatures, which could be, I've forced bulbs in the refrigerator, much to my wife's chagrin, where, you know, you're dedicating space to a pot of soil with bulbs planted. And after 8 to 10 weeks, when you start to see white roots coming out of the drain holes, and you're keeping these moist, mm-hmm. Fairly moist, you bring them, start acclimating them to some light, and then they quickly send up shoots and they bloom. And so the bulb forcing is why you're seeing hyacinths and tulips at your florists, you know, in pots in the winter months. So bulb forcing is, it's not an exact science. It's not difficult to do, but do a little more research on the best bulbs for doing that. And you can stage the timing of the forcing, the cold period, and you can segue and have, you know, bringing out hyacinths and tulips over the course of 2 months in the winter easily.
Jerry emailed us, what's the name of the grasses that have the huge white tassel? He sees them growing along highways, large areas along Highway 151 in southwest Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's likely miscanthus.
Yeah.
And I mentioned when we talked about pampas grass, there are some miscanthus that are thugs. So when you're seeing a thicket that's covering 2,000 square feet, that's a miscanthus you would never want to plant in your yard. You want a clumping plant, a clumping-type miscanthus. I'm sure that's it.
Yeah, I am as well. Camille in New Berlin emailed us. She brought her potted geraniums in last year, put them on the deck this spring. No indoor lights, just taking up way too much room in her kitchen. Sometimes she cuts them back and stick what she cuts off in her flower garden. Then she has more geraniums. Many times the plants look like small trees or bonsai plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the geraniums are very forgiving. And I mentioned my grandma, when I first asked her as a youth, what are all these plants hanging in your basement? Mm-hmm. She pointed out that they were geraniums that were older than I was, and she was never one to throw anything away. So geraniums are tough as nails, and some people do treat them as an annual. And we're talking, there are true perennial geraniums, of course, but our seed geraniums and the zonals and the various subtropical types, you can perpetuate. And we've talked a lot about that today on, you know, overwintering some of our plants for the next year.
Yeah, we sure have. Jeremy in Racine has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I own 4 Texas yew trees. I have one in each corner of my lot by the fence. And the one I have in my northwest corner has been taking the turn for the worse. It seems to be dropping a lot of its needles. I reached out to the city arborist, and he came out, and he inspected it. I wanted to get his input. He was concerned that maybe it was getting too much water. And usually Texas yews don't do well with excessive watering. So my concern was that I had a neighbor who had a pool, drained it a couple feet for last year when they closed it. And I was wondering if that might have been the cause. And is there a way for it to bounce back? I've already touched bases with my neighbor about it, so hopefully they could drain it in a different area. But is there a point of no return with this thing? Is it going to pretty much die on me after it reaches to a certain point? Or
all great
questions. And before you mentioned the city fella and the pool, my comment was going to be, I bet it's in a low spot or it's overly wet. So it's very likely it was the moisture. And think about the pool chemicals, too, are likely not beneficial, of course. So the question about it coming back, you may get the browning of the needles, which you're seeing, the orangey brown, and they'll drop. If you still have pliable stems, yews are extremely tough. So let's assume that water and those chemicals drain out and get flushed out, and your neighbor redirects the pool next year. You'll know by spring if that's coming back. But unless you're getting crispy, snappy branches, just leave it alone. There's not much you can do to help it at this point. But again, I'm 100% sure it was that pool.
Yeah. Jeremy, thank you so much. Rita in Park Falls wonders about lantanas. Can you bring them in a house as a house plant for the winter?
The short answer is absolutely yes. They're very demanding with light. So they, in our summer gardens, they need full blazing sun. So when we bring them into a more dim winter situation, they get a little scraggly. I would cut lantana way back and hold back the water extremely over the winter months. Just make sure they're alive. Keep them in a nice, sunny, warm spot. Even near a heating vent wouldn't hurt. And you can perpetuate lantana, yes.
And Pat in Elm Grove wonders, do acorns make a good mulch under some evergreens? Lord knows we have plenty of acorns this year.
Yeah, it has been what they call a mast year. We're heavy, heavy acorn production everywhere. And I've never heard of acorns brought up as mulch. You know, of course, critters are going to start working on them and under evergreens. I don't know. I mean, they, as a functional mulch, that layer would help retain moisture. I guess my concern would be, how is it affecting the pH? Because when you think of mulch under evergreens, many of our evergreens like a slightly acidic pH, and I'm not saying oaks don't provide that, but I don't know. It might be worth a shot.
Yeah. Well, why not? I wouldn't hesitate to give it a try. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked a lot about ornamental grasses. We certainly got into some amaryllis and so forth as we went through the show today. Fountain grass is a grass that I like a lot, and it pairs pretty well with mums.
Oh, it sure does. So when you think of fountain grasses, the cascading flowers, and I should mention there are true perennial fountain grasses, and they're all Pennisetums is the genera. But when you're going to your garden centers and such, if you're buying a purple, like a maroon leaf fountain grass, it's absolutely not hardy. But they are sold in fall as decoration because they'll look good until the hardest of frost. But Larry, to your comment, the cascading flowers are just gorgeous, and there are true perennial Pennisetums for our gardens. The furthest north in the state, they'd be challenging, but mid-state down south here, they'd be just fine. So I would encourage people to look into Pennisetums in general. They're top-notch.
Barton emailed, I just had a comment about the citrus trees. They typically get scale. Yeah, that's true. I just had a problem with, I just couldn't get rid of all of it on mine. He uses a spray of Volk oil, horticultural oil, a small amount of oil mixed with water in a spray bottle. He sprays 3 or 4 times before he brings them in. And that's probably what I should have done with that last time with limey. I'm going to have to get a new limey and start the process all over again. But I'm telling you, I was really sad when I just couldn't savor after how many years, 10 years or so. It was it was a great plant. She was a great plant, and I hope I can get another one just like her. Well, note, we are out of time, Mark. It's been a lot of fun today.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Thank you for having me on.
It really was, and we'll look forward to another visit from you. I hope you'll be back.
Will do. Thank you, Larry.
Mark Dwyer, speaker, educator, and author. His business, look it up online, Landscape Prescriptions by MD, or just type in Mark Dwyer. D-W-Y-E-R, and his name is definitely going to pop up, and you'll be able to look at his site. Our physical therapists will be in on Monday to talk about managing your Achilles, your ankle, and other lower leg pains. That's Monday, starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.